What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Happy Skews Day to you. It's September 1st, 2026. We're recording this at noon today, so you'll see us streaming in about 5 hours. It's noon on the left coast. I'm Trey, and that's Mark. We're doing this a day late because I've had a bit of a sinus infection I've been reeling from, but, you know, we'll do all right. We'll stick through it. Is it deepening my voice a little bit, Mark, at least for that?
Very sexy, very baritone, very, okay, very cool. White.
So at least there's that, you know.
Mustache looking good too, buddy. Speaking of machismo.
Yeah. Got a whole thing going with that. I dip in and out of the mustache. I haven't like done a full, like a real, like Bonnaroo level mustache. Because I used to do that every year when I go to Bonnaroo. You know what I mean? Gentlemen, start your mustaches about March or April or something like that. But I haven't done that because I haven't been going to Bonnaroo in a long time. But I'm about to really rock one for a little bit, I think.
Cool.
I made a joke on stage once. I didn't have my glasses on. I had contacts on. I had the mustache like this, and I was joking about how I looked like a barista or something like that. And I had shorter hair, and then like fans afterward was like, you look more like a cop than a barista. So then I changed it to, like, I don't remember, like fucking mixing a cop and a barista together. It's very on brand for me. Anyway, how are you doing?
How about a cop undercover as a barista?
Yeah, there you go. That's a fun character. Well, I might mull that over a little bit more.
Yeah, so we got I got a phone with today. We're talking about some South American cocaine politics in America fuckery, and then maybe some internet weirdos if we have time. So we're right in my fucking wheelhouse. This is the darkness I was born to, Trey. Uh-huh. Before we get to that, though, I want to talk a little bit about UAW's election for president, because it's one of those things where this keeps coming up, where it turns out things were on an honor system that we didn't think were on an honor system. Like, for example, what if a monitor installed to oversee a union that had some struggles with corruption was instead interested in having more corruption? Mm-hmm. No one thought of that.
Right. And you'd think they would have thought of that, because, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but I don't know about like the auto workers and stuff, but like they're like unions, and I'm huge, big pro union guy, but they've had like their go rounds with corrupted influence and stuff, right, over the years, meaning like crime, the mafia, that type of thing. They've been compromised and stuff before and that type of shit, so you'd think they'd, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, well, I mean, the unions went to the mafia because the bosses went to the cops.
Right.
both sides need their head crackers. Anyway, so what's going on, but I'm talking about is the United Auto Workers membership is currently engaging in an election campaign to see if they'll re-elect Sean Fain as president. There are people who prefer the old guard, obviously. It's like any sort of like political organization. But the old guard got thrown out of office because of corruption, which is what led to Fain's election in the first place as a reform candidate. And this corruption is not mafia stuff. The two former presidents were put in prison for spending union funds themselves, like using union dues to like buy boats and fancy dinners and shit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So because
this is why we can't have nothing, by the way. Mm-hmm. As a people. Yeah. We were kind of talking about this last week or on our Q&A or whatever it was. But it's the Q&A, I think, about like how anybody that wants to be a politician, you don't really want them doing it for the most part, like 95% of the time. It's the same type of thing with this. It's like, this is why humans can't have nothing. Because like unions are such a good idea and overall are a good thing, but it's like, or socialism or whatever, any kind of system you can come up with that is good and hits, there's always going to be assholes who like, you know, get the scheme their way to the top of it just to enrich themselves and then, you know, bring corruption in the picture because humans just be like that. And that's a real shame.
That's like, that's every institution is going to have some, you know, it's like churches or whatever. It's like,
that's why any regulations and stuff, you know, got to stay on top of that. Checks and balances. Right.
Other human beings with good intentions to watch them, right? So like, so that's where you get the idea of having a federal monitor oversee a union, right? So the federal, by the way, when the feds have this power to put a federal monitor over a union, you know, it's a compromise between Department of Labor and Department of Justice to make sure the working people don't get too uppity, right? So they put this federal monitor over the union, who the union has to pay for, right? So they have to pay this guy to tell them to don't do nothing bad, right? So the monitor is essentially intervening in the election against Fain because back in December of 2023, the UAW called for a ceasefire in Gaza. So the monitor is taking it upon himself to reinstall the corrupt faction because they're easier to boss around and don't worry about dead kids in the Middle East. All right. Mm-hmm. The monitor I'm talking about is a guy named Neil Barofsky. He's not some like MAGA dude. He's a bipartisan white shoe New York City lawyer. His first big government job was George W. Bush appointed him to help oversee the TARP program after the 2008 financial crisis. He got this job in 2021 under the Biden administration. He wrote a book, by the way, after the TARP bailout called Bailout, an inside account of how Washington abandoned Main Street while rescuing Wall Street. So it sounds like in some capacity, he's a guy we hit for me, right?
Yeah, he sounds all right based on that.
So after the UAW under Fain called for a ceasefire, in February of 2024, Borowski forwarded a letter to UAW from the Anti-Defamation League about the ceasefire, demand for a ceasefire in the Gaza war, with Borowski noting, although this issue is outside of the monitor's jurisdiction, 14 exclamation points inserted by me, we thought it was important to forward the message given the serious concerns raised here. So when I say, hey, a nice union you got there, be ashamed if something happened to it, I am being sincere, is what he's saying there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
why did he need to forward, why did, like, the Anti-Defamation League couldn't just send their own email to the United Auto Workers or something like that?
Borowski, Anti-Defamation League has no force of law, but he does. Borowski does. Right. So what he's pointing out here is that, and this will be ironic if you remember, like a bunch of obfuscation happened during the student protests in 2025. But if you remember, the kids did have material demands, the main one of which was for their universities to divest their endowments from the military industrial complex and defense tech industries, right? Because they didn't want their colleges to have profit incentives, the places where they learn international relations, political science, and history to be making money off an increase in war and death, right? Seems like a conflict of interest. So if you hold that in your head and remember this part of it, what Borowski's threatening the union with, he's pointing out that New York State's First in the Nation anti-boycott law requires state and local governments to divest from any group engaged in boycott calls. So because the UAW represents public and graduate employees at public universities, the state could be forced to divest from UAW's pension and retirement funds. Borowski's pointing out to UAW that they might lose a bunch of money because in the state of New York, it is mandatory to invest your retirement funds in Israeli weapons manufacturers. Right?
Wow.
Essentially. So, and then Borowski got caught lying about what happened on a conference call that was fucking recorded. He said that, like, He misconstrued a bunch of shit that Sean Fain said to be straightforwardly anti-Semitic, when what Fain had said, like, basically was that it was bullshit it was bullshit they were killing so many civilians, but Borowski construed as him saying it was bullshit that people were concerned about anti-Semitism. He just flat out misrepresented what he said. And in response to that, infuriated by both Borowski's charges and his denials, Fain said, "For anybody to ever fucking say I'm anti-Semitic, brother, I'll fight your ass in front of this building in a heartbeat."
Yep. That's classic. So,
Sean Fain.
That's on brand for Sean Fain, yeah.
Yeah, so Sean Fain continues to hit for me. So anyway, just like
that's why they had to get rid of him. You know, it's like he has made a splash and seems too hip for people. So of course, you know, internally they're going to be like, "I don't know about this guy." You know, we need somebody that's more of a line tower.
Yeah, we need a union boss who's more aligned with the bosses.
Right. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and jump into the show. We'll get started as we always do. Producer Matt, please. Daily Dumbass. Give me that graphic. This week's DD is Frodo Baggins for not knowing he could have just defeated Sauron with the power of dance.
All right, so what these dancing Gandalfs are in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. They're protesting in front of Peter Thiel's house. Peter Thiel's bought a house and plans to relocate. Like, is it a good sign where a techno-fascist feudal lord military contractor is planning to relocate to Buenos Aires because America's collapsing?
Bro, come on. Argentina especially, you know what I mean? It's what are you doing, bro? Okay, you know,
Phil,
he knows what he's doing with that.
He was born in Germany, right? Like, it's really like it's like the salmons, when the birds were turning to Capistrano, whatever. So that particular protest was about Thiel taking a stake in an Argentina oil company. But since then, like, he's had a 24/7 protest in front of his house that have basically morphed into just a fuck Peter Thiel protest party. If you want to play this next video, it's just like people hanging out in front of Peter Thiel's house chanting, "Out Peter, out." All right, so Theo's kind of like, it makes sense because he is a defense contractor and a guy, like a government contractor, one of America's richest people and one of the biggest financiers of our current government, the party in government. It's sort of, he's like basically being protested as an effigy of America with frustrations in the reading, in the region. And like, I just want to talk about this for a second because like so many news stories in, we're about to talk about a couple of them, you'd be like, why haven't I heard about this? Because they get no fucking oxygen in the American media. It's like, South America, nothing in South America actually happens according to the U.S. media. It's very fucking weird.
Oh, dude, I can't even, other than you, on this show talking about that crazy motherfucker that got elected down there and us trying to bail out their, Ayn Randian approach to governance and Bolsonaro and all the Argentinian beef, all of that stuff came from you on this show, and outside of those things, other than Venezuela, the bullshit we did in Venezuela, I couldn't even tell you the last South American based story that I heard in the news or the media or whatever in this country.
Right. You see it's like Plato's shadow cave. You see reflections of it and stuff. People kind of know that Trump's screwing over American cattle ranchers in an effort to boost Javier and Milei, right? But they don't really people don't really know why he's trying to do it. And speaking of Javier and Milei, I do want to note that because this gets so little coverage in American media, I'm trying to make sense of it through some Google Translate and a little bit of documentaries and stuff. But I was surfing around Latin American social media, and you kind of got to reason backwards. I want to play this next clip. Here's a clip from an AI generated Simpsons parody. Play without sound, Matt, so you don't get dinged for copyright. But it's a special news report where Kent Brockman is interviewing Javier Milei. And this new generation of right-wing populists, Trump clone leaders that have taken over across South America, there's this meme generated that all of them are coked up sociopaths, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, so when you watch this clip, what you see is that Kent Brockman is speaking Spanish, interviewing Javier Milei, and then Milei will take out a bag of cocaine and pour it into his Monster energy drink here in a second. And we talk about how this gets covered in American media. There goes the coke. You can cut it back. So you'll see occasionally see stories in American cable news where they'll talk about Trump's dwindling support among Latin Americans, especially Latin American men, because he had a boom in support from them in the 2024 election. This complete and he went from being 15 plus 15 to negative 40 something underwater. And because the American news media thinks we're all whores with no principles, it's always it's gas prices and inflation, right? But I just want to posit to you that 25% of Americans speak Spanish and they can read the Spanish language news that I cannot. And they're in WhatsApp groups with their family all across Latin America and South America who are talking about what's going on in their countries. And it's pretty fucked up. So I want to talk about it. So there's a few stories in Latin America going on right now. For example, Colombia just elected a new president whose day job was being a lawyer for drug cartels. All right. He barely squeaked over the line with our support, a huge amount of support from the Trump administration, a bunch of last-minute votes that came in from the United States, the Colombians that live overseas here, that Colombia's last president says his election was rigged by the United States and Israel. I don't know about that. I do know that he's saying it, is what I'm telling you. In Ecuador, Daniel Noboa, who's Trump's boy, he has a bunch of military crackdowns on labor protests heading into its third year. Recently, a Polish anti-corruption activist who's looking at Noboa's ties to the cocaine business got beaten to death at her home. That's the international flap with Poland, who's supposedly our ally. And a BBC documentary just came out on connections between the drug gangs and the government. And a local reporter who worked on that documentary was gunned down by a gang of six-man hit squad. Right. Just last week, Ecuador's intelligence chief, along with five Americans, were killed in a helicopter crash in Kenya. One of the Americans was, quote, a Miami restaurateur. Okay. In Brazil, one of Melania's ex-best friends, who's a Brazilian model, has accused Paulo Zampoli, who's her ex-husband and one of Trump's best friends, of murdering a guy who worked for the United Nations.
Holy shit.
Right. Seems like there's a lot going on for us not to be hearing about, right?
Yeah, I will say, in my, typical, from my, white American perspective, the sort of, perhaps maybe racist depictions and stuff or whatever over the years of Central and South America or just the Netflix series I've watched. This does kind of fit the general perception that I have of, in my head, down there, it's just all cartels and guerrillas and guns in the jungle and fucking and crooked politicians and fucking getting strung up and stuff like that. That's what I think is just happening down there, just
right
all the time.
Okay.
And I'm sure that's ridiculous, but...
It is, but there will be that because the case I'm making to you is that we are heavily involved in making it that way.
Of course, right? Yeah. I'm also at least somewhat aware of that. You know, Narcos has the CIA guy in it to let you know that, you know, we've got some, you know, fingers and all that down there, so...
So, let's humanize a little bit. Besides the dancing Gandalfs in Buenos Aires, there's a big trend in Latin America right now called aura battling. What people will do is people will meet in the street instead of dance battles or rap battles. They do aura battles where they wear interesting clothes and pose at each other, and the crowd votes on who the coolest person is.
Right.
They're people living lives.
That's kind of that scene from Zoolander. Remember?
Yeah. That's it. Zoolander. It's very much making.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yes. It's Zoolander. Yeah. So let me tell you the story I'm about to tell you about, and I need you to keep in mind, this is a very explosive scandal in South America. It is probably the biggest story in the Western Hemisphere right now, and the only English language coverage of it I've seen is in The Guardian, which is a British newspaper. What happened was an Argentinian guy by the name of Fernando Cerameto was arrested in Bolivia for hiring hitmen to kill his pregnant girlfriend. This story was caught, the shooting itself was caught on video. She was shot four times at point blank range. She's pretty. The story involves sex, murder, cocaine, political intrigue, Donald Trump, and the CIA. So you can understand why U.S. media thinks it's so fucking boring.
Okay. So you said hiring a hitman to kill, and that hitman then did kill this guy's pregnant girlfriend, the woman.
No, she survived.
Oh,
she survived. Yeah. They shot her four times at point blank range. I can't believe she lived, but she did. So, Cerameto, for his job, is a political consultant / bag man who's known in South America as the King of Trolls.
Good.
Because he runs so many bot farms. His business partner is in a political consulting company with Brad Parscale, who is Trump's former campaign manager. They have clients in Honduras, Argentina, Bolivia. He helped Bolsonaro in his coup attempt in Brazil back a couple years ago. And here's an Economist story from last December where it is a profile of Cerameto. The headline is MAGA's Man in Latin America. And the story is about Cerameto securing Trump's help in getting Nasri Osfura elected president in Honduras. The investigation of Cerameto has widened into corruption and cocaine trafficking. He was apparently partners in a smuggling operation with some guys in Bolivia's version of the DEA, where the cocaine was going from Bolivia to Brazil, so people there must be sweating too. This is a scandal that could topple half American fucking governments. All of them are in bed with Trump. And nobody's fucking... They got into his phone, right? His phone is basically nothing but a cold wallet for cryptocurrency, where he was moving like $40,000 a trip around and traveling around the various countries for whatever the fuck he's doing, payoffs and bribes and shit.
Yeah, this is crazy. This is definitely... I look forward to this Netflix series in a few years when this comes out with this guy in it.
Yes. Yes. So the girlfriend, as I mentioned, lived. Her name is Beller. From a hospital bed, she has alleged that Cerameto took $800,000 a month from Argentinian President Javier Milei's operation to run a bribe machine. She also claims that Cerameto is a CIA asset. For his part, Cerameto says that Beller staged the shooting herself in order to destabilize the Bolivian government.
What?
Yeah.
That the woman, the pregnant woman, hired a hitman to shoot her four times? But not kill her for like a psyop or a PR stunt or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I personally would go with an attempted shooting.
Yeah, right.
But that was just...
Yeah. Broke into the house. She narrowly escaped. Something like that. I wouldn't go. Even if, shoot me once in the leg if you gotta. But four times, that feels like a bit much. You know.
The Sopranos did this and Bobby Bacala had to shoot that rapper. It was the meaty, the fleshy part of the thigh.
Yeah.
Remember?
Everybody
the fleshy
knows.
Part of the thigh. Yeah. So, Cerameto's claims have been amplified by Javier Milei, who has reposted messages on Twitter questioning whether her wounds were even real. Again, this is the guy Trump is destroying the United States beef industry for. Now let's talk about Venezuela. This story broke late last week, and the administration later confirmed parts of it, even though they're still denying parts of it. But the U.S. government and an unnamed private operator in Venezuela have formed a new company that was given the rights to untapped oil fields in Venezuela for 100 years.
Uh-huh.
To which I say, no, they didn't. You cannot make a sign a contract for 100 years. Your great-grandkids are bound by this deal? I don't fucking think so. According to the Wall Street Journal, this is the part the administration denies. The Pentagon has a 35% stake in this oil company. Is it a good idea for a country's army to have an independent financial pipeline that's not tied to the government it supposedly works for?
Yeah, I don't fucking know. This is where Trump said this is the plot or the whatever to. He claimed we were going to refill our oil reserves with Venezuelan oil, and this is what that is, ostensibly.
Yeah, which even if like it'll be like hypothetically if this does go through, it'll be like 7 years before we get the first barrel of oil from this because Venezuelan oil isn't good.
Well, I was about to say, I remember when the Venezuela thing first came up, you said on here that what people don't realize is that not all oil is created equal, and their oil is like super crude or whatever the terms were, and it's like it's a whole thing to process it and refine it and all that stuff. It takes a long time and it's expensive.
This is like this is sort of a non-ideological critique of like of Venezuela's effort to like establish petro-socialism. Is like if the price point had made sense, it might have worked.
Right.
But the problem is the oil takes more money to refine it than it costs to than you make from selling it.
Right.
So it's like a trap. So anyways, we'll get to that in a little bit. But like this new deal is on top of the one we've been doing where $13 billion has already evaporated from Venezuela into a Qatari bank account that's controlled by someone connected to the White House. But we don't know whose name is on this bank account with $13 billion in it. I'm going to guess it's the one kid Trump trusts, Barron. So if you're keeping track here, we now have a financial interest in what we were previously calling a socialist dictatorship. So if the people take to the streets to cry for capitalism and democracy, do we send in the Marines to shoot them?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not even that. It's not what matters. What matters is just, I don't know, being on the right team and in the right pockets. You know what I mean? Like,
ideological
allegiances or whatever in other countries.
No, I mean, like, Delcy Rodriguez, the sensible president of Venezuela, is just trying to survive the day. You know, she's caught between six rocks and a hard place, and I get that. But, like, it's like none of this is going to last very long, is my point. Like, this is not a sustainable deal because, like, Venezuela's constitution that they ratified in 1999 forbids outsiders from controlling their natural resources. It's kind of the whole point of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the reason. It'd be like, If Trump announced that we were signing a deal with the UK to put the King of England back in charge, it'd be like, wait, what did we do this all for? You know, it's like, and I just like, I can't believe that anyone sincerely thought that Trump was like trying to bring freedom to the Venezuelan people. But you got to admit now that you're a huge fucking sucker, because now if they want freedom, they have to overthrow America too. See what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I don't know, dude. Who fucking actually thought that? I mean, I guess people that just wanted to like jerk Trump off for doing it and act like it was a heroic thing. But anybody who was doing that never gave a fuck about the freedom of the Venezuelan people anyway, or Trump's, you know, actual intentions where that was concerned.
People with relatives in Venezuela who have been impoverished and like oppressed, and like I get like holding out against hope that some good can come from it, but like, The politicians I'm referring here to, the you know, the Congress people from Florida who are almost entirely are all just fucking huge suckers right now. There's a woman, I mean, where is this lady? Let me scroll down. It's Florida rep by the name of Maria Elvira Salazar. She posted a tweet blasting Trump's oil deal with Venezuela and then deleted it and had to post to praise it. The first tweet was, any oil deal with Venezuela's interim regime has an expiration date the day President Trump leaves the White House, which is true. She later deleted both English and Spanish posts and returned about an hour later with a very different message. The U.S.-Venezuela oil deal is a great deal for the United States and the Venezuelan people, which it's, you know, fucking not. But we'll get to that in a little bit. I just like, let me quote here from another person who admitted they got played for a sucker. And we're talking about Fox News host Rachel Campos Duffy, who is the wife of Trump's transportation secretary. Because, like, it's already a great idea here to have a government full of former TV news hosts who are still having sex with other TV news hosts. Quote, maybe I was a little too naive here. I thought the primary purpose of taking out Nicolas Maduro was because he was a communist dictator. We were actually going to allow the Venezuelan people. Until their elections, there will be a lot of questions about motivations here, whether the interests of the Venezuelan people are at hand. But now, because of this oil deal, we cannot permit there to be elections. This is like this is why we overthrew the government of Iran back in the 50s. Right. What happens if they vote in a government who doesn't want to be a part of this deal anymore? Which of course they would.
You would think they would want to do that. Like, what Venezuelan wouldn't want to the country to keep control of, you know, that much oil or their own natural resources? Like, it would be in their own interest to try to, you know, upend that, which is against our interest. So, what do we do?
And just like I brought up, like, we call it Venezuela, but the full name of the country is the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. Bolivia and Venezuela are both named after Simon Bolivar, who's a famous South American military leader who fought to free them from outside rule, specifically Spain. But like, the whole point is we're not ruled by motherfuckers from across an ocean. So like, this isn't going to be permitted, especially when, like, if you look at who they're actually allying with locally here. The point man for this deal is a guy by the name of Alejandro Betancourt Lopez. Lopez is also the president of Hawkers, a Spanish sunglasses company. Cool. He's known in Venezuela as one of the bolachicos. It's a derogatory term for a group of young Venezuelan men who have become millionaires thanks to their close connections to the Chavista regime. Basically, they suck dictator dick and all got rich off of it, basically. Uh-huh. And they'd be given a nickname because of it. How he made his billions in the first place was he paid bribes for government electricity contracts. And then there were huge power blackouts all over the country when the money didn't actually go to generating electricity. So there's a peek into our future, probably. So, bolachicos, Venezuelans invented a term for fail bros who sell out the people to be parasites in the corrupt government. And then we see that guy and, like, sounds like my kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
So just imagine how we as Americans would feel about it if we found out, like, the guy behind Fyre Festival had become a government contractor and then had worked out a deal to sell the Grand Canyon to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely is more extreme, but this is like, you talk about bolachicos or whatever, and I immediately thought of, like, fucking Big Balls and them when they were around for a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, like, pushback to that, but there was also obviously a lot of people that are like, these guys are exactly what this country needs right now. Big Balls is exactly what this country needs. Right. But, you know, the other half of the country is like, what the fuck are we doing? A kid named Big Balls is in charge of, you know.
So imagine if in our current reality, and Big Balls did steal stuff to make money, but at least sort of like it's more of a complicated pathway to understand than what this guy did. Let's say Big Balls took the Social Security information he stole from the federal government and sold it on the black market for $2 billion, bought the federal Everglades, and flipped it to a foreign power to be strip mined or something. It's sort of like, yeah, it's a closer analogy.
That would be a little bit worse. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So Betancourt, by the way, lives in the United Kingdom, and he can't leave there, or couldn't until recently, until we got him out of it, because he was awaiting extradition to Switzerland for money laundering. As I point out the irony here, when the Swiss are trying to prosecute you for money laundering, you're fucking...
No shit. Well, who knows better, you know? Takes one to know one bad thing, Mark. They're the experts, you know?
Look, we'll keep a little bit of Nazi gold for you, no problem whatsoever, but what this guy was doing... All right, so what he's doing, basically, so he was caught up in an international $1.2 billion money laundering investigation that led to a federal indictment here in the United States of his cousin and some other Venezuelans in Miami. The way he escaped that was he hired his lawyer at that point, Rudy Giuliani, who basically called in favors during Trump 1 to say that Betancourt did not know about this crime. He's but a young, innocent bolachico. That meeting came a month after Giuliani and two associates stayed at Betancourt's Spanish castle, El Amin, and met with an aide to Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, urging him to investigate Joe Biden. So the scheme that led to Trump's first impeachment, where he tried to get Ukraine to frame Joe Biden for a crime in the run-up to the 2020 election by withholding weapons shipments, that was hatched in Betancourt's Spanish castle.
Wow. What a tangled web they weave.
Yeah. So for this, as far as I don't know what Julianne had made in it, but he did get some free glasses out of it. You got this picture. Who's Julianne sporting some frames from Betancourt's Hawker's line. So yeah, 25 years after 9/11, America's mayor is getting money launderers out of corruption problems for free glasses. Yeah.
Yeah. Is the glasses just like a part of his money laundering venture for this guy? Like all this other money is from all this shadowy, corrupt, you know, geopolitical stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's got a sunglasses front, basically. Or did he make his money in sunglasses and then get into the, you know, world politics game?
He made his money stealing electricity from the Venezuelan people, right, and then put it into sunglasses. You got some of your money in safe stuff like sunglasses.
No, I know. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. But do it all legal like Bugsy Siegel, as Snoop Dogg says.
And do you want to guess if Betancourt appears in Epstein's emails?
I'm going to go with yes.
Yeah. He's mentioned in the email that Jeffrey Epstein sent a third party asking for an introduction to Betancourt. So if you want to, that's like a big league call up to the international finance scumbag. Yeah, it's like Johnny Carson inviting you over to the couch.
Yeah, that's a flex for this dude. Like Jeff Epstein's asking about me.
Right. All right. So we got to take a break, I guess. We'll come back in a second.
We'll be right back right after this. Weekly Skews is brought to you by ZBiotics. I'm from East Tennessee, you know, where the traditional approach to a night of drinking involves exactly zero scientists. So when somebody told me PhD scientists had developed a game-changing product called Pre-Alcohol by ZBiotics, I was a little skeptical, you know, but then I read up on it. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to break down acetaldehyde, a byproduct of drinking alcohol. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that is designed to break down that byproduct. Pre-alcohol is your first drink of the night, right? And then you drink responsibly after that, and you can still enjoy your activities the next day. ZBiotics has sold more than 14 million bottles of this and earned the trust of thousands of customers, including me, so pretty good track record. ZBiotics little bottle that goes down in one swallow. Got a nice lemon-lime situation flavor profile to it. Then you have a few drinks again, responsibly. Of course, we're all adults here. Next morning, I'm still up early, coffee made, doing stuff, you know, hanging out with my kids, helping Katie in the yard, things of that nature. Katie's noticed, by the way. That's my endorsement. My wife has noticed that I'm more of a human being in the mornings following a night out these days, thanks to ZBiotics. If you don't believe me, try it for yourself today. If you're unsatisfied, they'll refund your entire order. No questions asked. Just go to ZBiotics.com/skew and use the promo code SKEW, S-K-E-W, for 15% off your first order. One more time, that's ZBiotics.com/SKEW, and use the promo code SKEW for 15% off. Weekly Skews is brought to you by Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Back to school season. This year, 5 million children across Texas are going to be greeted by the Ten Commandments in their classrooms. How about that? Texas politicians passed a law requiring the Ten Commandments in every public school classroom, forcing the religion on every kid who attends those schools. I didn't grow up in church, you know, but I know that a faith that needs a state legislature to hang it on the wall for you is not a real faith at all. My opinion is that real faith does not require a mandate from the state. 28 families in Texas, supported by Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, are taking this fight to the Supreme Court, and we need you to amplify their voices before the Supreme Court gets its hands on the case. They're going to go up, but we're going to fight to get them taken down. All right. That's Texas public school parent Ted Lowe. Ted and Rebecca Lowe are an interfaith couple. Ted is Jewish. Rebecca is Christian. And their kids are in Texas public schools. The story they tell in this video is moving, and we hope that everybody hears it and shares it. There is a human cost to Christian nationalist policies like these Ten Commandment laws and to the decisions that the Supreme Court hands down. So visit au.org/10C. To learn more about this case and how you can help join the fight to protect church-state separation, that's au.org/10C. Weekly Skews is brought to you by Quince. You know those pieces in your closet you find yourself wearing on repeat? The sweater that goes with everything, that perfect pair of pants, the tee you somehow always reach for first? Those are the pieces that make getting dressed easy. That's what Quince does best. Got a few things from them. I got this green t-shirt I've been getting all kinds of compliments from. Started from my wife, Katie. She said, first day I wore it out of my room, she was like, where'd you get that shirt? You normally look like trash. You look good in that shirt. Thanks, honey. Thank you, Quince. It looks good. But it wasn't just them. I wore it on a live episode, a Patreon episode of this show recently, and there were people in the comments saying, Trey, where'd you get that shirt? I like that shirt. I said, well, you're in luck because we got it from our sponsor, Quince. All of those are true stories. It's a hidden shirt. What do we tell you? They have good stuff. They have good stuff because Quince focuses on high-quality wardrobe staples that are made with premium materials like 100% Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, merino wool. The styles are all timeless, versatile, and designed to become the dependable pieces you reach for day after day. Their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters start at just $60, giving you the softness and quality you'd expect from a luxury brand, but without the luxury price tag. Quince also makes premium pants, fitted tees, polos, breathable active wear, quality basics designed to work across your wardrobe and hold up to everyday wear. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for high quality and not brand markup. And by the way, it's not just clothing they got over there. Quince brings their same approach to everything they make, from hotel quality bedding and bath to kitchen essentials and thoughtfully designed furniture. They make well-designed pieces for everyday living. Find your next fall favorites at Quince. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/skew, skew. Get free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/skew, quince.com/skew. Check it out. All right, we are back. Mark, what are we doing now?
So, all right, so to finish up the Venezuela stuff, you alluded to it earlier, but the oil part of this isn't even going to work. I want to quote here from David Brockman, who is a former GOP congressman in the 70s and 80s and Ronald Reagan's former OMB director. Quote, the 65 million barrels amount to an economic tar baby. And I never knew what tar baby meant. It always just sounded vaguely racist,
it like old timey racist. It's from Br'er Rabbit, isn't it? But it's a scheme he cooked up, right? It's like a decoy type thing or whatever.
It was like a trap. From an Uncle Remus tale where like somebody makes a baby doll out of tar and then taunts Br'er Rabbit with it. And the idea is when he punches it, it costs more effort getting stuck to it than you. Get out. The juice isn't worth the squeeze is the point, right?
Yeah.
Like he did all this complicated math to point out that basically like it costs like $71 a barrel to extract and process the oil and you're only going to get $60 for it. So it doesn't make any sort of economic sense for it. It's because the Trump says we're going to refill the strategic petroleum reserve with it, which doesn't make any fucking sense when anybody knows what they're talking about. I mean, quote here from an expert. The SBR has strict quality requirements, such as a maximum of 1.99% sulfur content. Venezuelan oil is 5.7% sulfur, which is insanely sour, is the term for when it's like that. It also happens to be highly acidic, which would eat away at the storage cave walls, likely causing cave-ins and collapse. That's one problem with it. It's also very goopy and thick, leading to the tar-baby metaphor. So if you just pour it in, you can never get it back out because it's too sludgy. So it just becomes a giant tar cave of sludge that's unpumpable. That's if it doesn't cave in the walls of the SPR. So we're like, usually you tell lies in order to get something.
Right.
We are lying about the quality of this oil and paying extra money to extract this oil on a money-losing deal to try to help Trump pretend he can get through the midterms without exhausting the strategic petroleum reserve.
Yeah, but what is like the... Yeah, what's the long-term strategy for that or whatever, you know? Because it's like...
Come on with another lie.
I get why you want to tell that lie right now because they need some kind of win. And it's like, no, don't worry. We got a plan and this is what we're going to do. And people won't look into it. And it sounds like, oh, no, he's got a plan. It's fine. But it's untenable, right? So it's not going to get any better in practicality. And it's not an actual plan. So like what, like I said, long-term, how is it supposed to... I guess they don't, long term maybe doesn't matter. Some people will get enriched in the short term or something, fucking, and then they'll all be gone. Also
worth pointing out the reason he's having to do this deal with a new established entity to pump and refine this oil is because American companies still won't do it because they know it's such a bad fucking deal.
Right.
So, I don't know. All right, let's talk about some internet weirdos. I want to talk about Pete Hegseth's Pentagon Army of Human Bots for a second, but let's talk about the state of the MAGA internet because that's essentially who governs this at the moment. Play this post from the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Armed Services if you got this, Matt. Do we think that's real? All right. If you can't see what we're doing, if you listen to the audio version, it's an AI-generated video Trump posted of Canadian geese with his hair and human arms carrying M16s and defending Chicago from Canada, I guess, in the right. middle of Lake Ontario.
What the fucking fuck?
Oh, I know. I don't... Right. I don't even know where to start, dude. There. So, yeah, Canadian... I feel like Canadian geese are one of like these symbols of Canada. So It's like they were chosen because it's like, I'll fuck you, even the geese love us more or something type thing.
And yes.
Birds with arms are funny. And then you give them guns. I don't know what the fuck is going on here. Who came up with this? One of the big balls adjacent 20-something-year-olds on his... like social media team on a Natalie Harp underling or something, and he just loves all this papaw Facebook shit.
Usually Natalie finds this stuff, I believe. So she spends all her day scrolling Trump's social media. So what I want to talk about mainly is like, and so on Sunday, the Washington Post broke a story that Pete Hegseth's Pentagon has moved active duty troops with large Twitter accounts into civilian jobs to pay them to post nice things about Pete Hegseth, including electioneering to defeat Thomas Massey, which should be really illegal, right? This is in the middle of... like, we're in the middle of a war. Like, I feel like the troops could be doing something. I mean, I don't want there to be a war at all, but I feel like if you're going to have a war, the troops should be doing war stuff and not posting mean tweets about Thomas Massey. But that's just me. This is a different scandal, by the way, than the one uncovered earlier last week where Hegseth's Pentagon had hired Twitter posters who were civilians to say cool shit about Pete Hegseth. And this all came to light because of one woman who I wanted to have some fun talking about. It's a woman whose internet handle is called the Data Republican, who lives two lives. And she has now been revealed to be as a paid secret Pentagon mouthpiece. This is a woman whose government name is Jenica Pounds, who is a deaf software engineer who did some notable work on software improvements for deaf individuals. That part is cool. At the same time, she moonlighted as an anonymous internet personality until 2024-2025 when Elon became a fan, and now she has a million followers, right? And she segued into government work by making these databases, databases that suggested to Elon what stuff Doge should cut. For example, spitballing here, early warning mudslide technology in Nepal, for example, that was cut.
Wait, really?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not surprised by that, but that's the first time I'd heard that. Dude, of course, it's like every fucking time. Every time something bad happens, there's always another shooter drop in that way.
Mm-hmm. So, Data Republican and her posts were shared pretty constantly by not just by Musk, who was Utah Senator Mike Lee, who's her home state senator, and she's followed by J.D. Vance. She first got some public notoriety from this, and she started doing, even without putting her name out there, was doing podcast appearances where she wore sunglasses and a hooded sweatshirt to try to keep her identity secret. But she went on like a bunch of big time podcasts. She went on Glenn Blaze's show. She went on Nicole Shanahan's show. That was RFK Jr.'s VP nominee. Here's her undercover. If you got this picture. So obviously no one's ever going to figure out who she is, right? But once people did figure out what she was, she claimed that she had been doxxed by people trying to silence her. But this is like a man who knew her put on Facebook that he knew her from the deaf community, which then she had to confirm who she was. But like, so you go on a podcast where you're communicating through a sign language interpreter and you identify yourself as a deaf white woman software engineer from Utah who's a Mormon. How many of you are there?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, not that hard. Doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to figure that one out eventually, especially in this this day and age. But anyway, go on. I'm looking forward to wherever this is headed with this new character we've just been introduced to, Miss Jenica here.
Okay, so let me tell you. I guess I should tell you how she accidentally revealed this plot Pete Hegseth had, where he's been paying a bunch of people to post nice things about him and good things about the Pentagon. So last week, she posted some DMs she'd gotten from a person who turned out to be an undersecretary of state, was trying to use her as a cutout to leak some secret documents about Cuba, all right, in their effort to gin up a war against Cuba. Jenica thought she was being set up in a deep state plot to frame her for being a leaker or like some sort of traitor who was leaking top secret documents. So she posted the screen grabs, the DMs, and accused them of basically trying to end up putting her in prison.
See, this is why I don't know if it's worth it to fuck. I mean, I don't, you know, whatever. They're making millions of dollars, these like people in these positions, and get, but it's like the paranoia that's got to come with it. If you're at all intelligent, I feel like, in dealing with these people, you know what I mean? Because they sell each other out and shit all the time. I'd probably think something like that too if I was her, but I don't want to be thinking that, is my point. Like, for like Twitter posting and shit, she's like probably losing sleep at night thinking she's going to get disappeared at some point or whatever because she won't like play into their Cuba plot or something. Like, I just don't think it's worth it, is all I'm saying. All these people, they, I don't know. It's short-sighted.
I just like, it's very funny to me to actually be you actually are the deep state.
Right.
You're being covertly paid to post opinions that aren't yours to pretend they're your own independent thoughts.
Right.
And you're worried that another deeper state is going to frame you.
That's what I mean. You get down and it's states all the way down. You know what I mean?
It's all so petty and stupid. Like, again, this is a dying social media platform that is just populated by, the only people left on there anymore are politicians, mainstream media figures, sports reporters, and psychopaths. That's it. And me scrolling to get NBA news because NBA news hasn't moved to any other social media platform yet. People try to like, so all these people got suspicious of each other because the ones who aren't on the Pentagon payroll are like, wait a minute, who am I fucking been talking to? Are you a Fed? They're all Feds now. There's the DM she posted with the lady who turned out to be Sarah B. Rogers, the State Department Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy, so Jenica went public with this and Rogers was like, LOL, it's me. You don't need to be secretive about this. I wasn't trying to fuck you. Anyway, so, but the Navy, another story out last week, that the military spent so much money on the Iran war, like way over their budget. The Navy might miss fucking payroll. And the Department of Defense is paying this moron to tweet stuff and be worried about end up stitched up in federal prison. And like I said, they're all wondering if each other are Feds now. And I just want to say, like, do you remember the term snitch jacketing? I know we've talked about this before.
Snitch jacketing?
Yeah. So one thing, undercover Feds want to, like, disrupt any sort of, like, underground movement, like when they show up to, like, a housing rights group or the Black Panthers or whatever, one of the go-to moves is you start accusing other people of being Feds.
Right.
Because, like, that way you sow distrust, the organization's uncohesive and doesn't work, and you don't have to actually do anything or arrest anybody. They just all quit, right? So they've all snitch-jacketed each other, basically what's happening. let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. So over the weekend, there was a pretty explosive report that came out about the Secretary of Defense apparently, like, twice a month puts out what's called a Secretary of Defense Orders Book, where he sends it to all his, like, strategic commanders. It basically lets everybody know so they're on the same page who's supposed to be moving forces around where, who has access to what resources and what broad mission parameters they're supposed to have for the next couple of weeks, right? And when the commanders read this Orders Book, they can go back to Hegseth and say, we don't think this is a good idea, right? They had all done that. It's called a non-concurs, right? They said, like, we'll do this, but we don't think this is bad, right? All having to do stuff with the Iran war. That report leaked. And then it caused, because of the data Republican stuff, it led to a big influencer spat because none of these people can trust anything each other is saying, right? So Sean Parnell, who's a Pentagon spokesman, came out and said, this is really funny here, publishing highly classified assessments from the Secretary's Orders Book is a crime. It's a betrayal of the force, and it's inaccurate. So the information you're leaking is top secret. Also, it's made up.
Right.
So then the response to that was this viral post on Twitter/X. Parnell's a subliterate idiot who fucks the wives of deployed soldiers. He had no core of integrity as a lieutenant or a captain. I have no idea why he holds a position of responsibility at the Pentagon. He should be badly running a roofing crew.
Sounds like you answered your own question to me. I mean, with this Pentagon, do you know what I mean? Like...
Mm-hmm.
He's a subliterate idiot with no integrity who shouldn't even be running a roofing crew. Yeah, that's how he got this high-level job in PDXS, you know, Pentagon or whatever. That's who excels there. That's what they're looking for, is guys like that. That's the cream rising to the top.
Absolutely. So if you wonder, like, well, what might these mouthpieces might be doing other than posting, like, tweets, right? Could they be doing anything remotely? Is it anything more than a waste of money? And I do basically, what's
all the time I wonder this.
Yes.
So please go ahead.
They're also apparently running really clumsy, half-assed, stupid attempts to, like, kill and capture and blackmail compromise operations. So here's a story that didn't make sense previously until after the Data Republican paid tweeter stuff broke. Recently, a reporter named Dan Friedman sent their Pentagon press office a series of questions concerning Eric Garrisey, who's a senior Pentagon advisor to Hegseth. Garrisey served did a tour in Iraq with Hegseth in the mid-2000s and is now currently part of the Pentagon effort to instill a, quote, warrior ethos within the U.S. military, which involves more tweeting than I would have imagined.
Yeah.
Garrisey now leads a team that is, quote, reviewing the role of women in the armed forces, which is what makes what I'm about to tell you pertinent to his job role, right? This is not some just character assassination. His opinion about women could matter to his job, you know what I'm saying? The guy discovered that Garrisey's email address is linked to a public Goodreads page with a currently reading list that includes various books featuring stories about, quote, Asian wife sharing.
Bro, I mean, it is so not difficult to avoid having things like this happen, I feel like. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't, everybody's got their own, like, weird shit they're into, I guess, or whatever. You ain't gonna find none of that linked to my fucking work email that I have, or like, ever in a million years. You're using your fucking DOD.gov fucking email address to open up a Goodreads account about fucking Korean titty porn or whatever the fuck. Titty porn, he says. But anyway, like, yeah. It's insane. These people are so insane, dude.
I'm trying to imagine non-titty porn.
As soon as I said it, I was like, fucking all porn is, there's not all of it, but anyway.
Yeah, I only watch porn where the women keep their shirts on.
Yes, that would be weirder. But whatever, it's Asian cuck porn is what it is, what I should have said. Not titty porn. Their titties are in it, I'm sure, but the Asian cuck porn. It's fucking wild. It's wild to do that.
It's really, email. It's not even that the controversy here, the scandal is not that he's into whatever he's into, like watching while he has sex or masturbates or whatever. It's that he's so careless that his female employees could easily find out this is what he's into.
Yeah.
So these pornographic works with titles such as An Asian Wife Went With Her Dad's Friend, A Cuckold Story, appear on the list alongside two books by Hegseth and a handful of military histories. So he is doing some reading for work purposes here. The books can contain detailed descriptions of cuckolding, group sex, and scenes involving ladyboys, you know, the term used for Thai transgender women. The page active since 2021 was taken down the day after I contacted the Pentagon and Garrisey about it, was what Friedman wrote. So he contacted to ask about this guy, what this guy might be reading on the clock and his role as like the new guy in charge of the Pentagon's women or whatever. So the next day, Jack Posobiec, remember him, the guy that started Pizzagate? Former active duty Navy guy who got fired from the Navy for tweeting, and now apparently we're left to conclude is on Pete Hegseth's payroll to tweet stuff, because what happened was Posobiec emailed Friedman and asked him to comment on whether I have a, quote, creepy fetish for Asian women with details of Friedman's dating history. And Friedman was honest about what he's talking about. He's like, basically, during my bad divorce, I had a fling with a woman who happened to be Asian. And it's not my favorite thing about my personal life, but it's not pertinent to national security.
Right. So Jack Posobiec was trying to, like, blackmail him.
Yes.
With that information. Right.
Yeah. So now, like, so Friedman, again, because a few weeks ago, didn't really understand the connection between Posobiec and Hegseth or what he was doing at the time. But now we can all assume the tweeter who originated Pizzagate is now on the Pentagon's payroll. So back to Jenica. I want to talk here about, Jenica's day job, how she got radicalized into being conservative. this particular kind of Elon Musk conservative, because she's not like a gun rights person or religious or whatever, even though she grew up Mormon. What she is she's a tech nerd. She was a senior software engineer at an AI lending company called Upstart, which is a company that's tangled with regulators, the Consumer Federal Protection Bureau, for years. Upstart, by the way, got a bunch of Series A funding and additional funding from Peter Thiel. course he did. Peter Thiel's everywhere. So what was Upstart's beef with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? The company received a special designation from CFPB in 2017 during Trump's first administration, which allowed its special regulatory treatment by immunizing the lender from being charged with fair lending law violations with respect to its underwriting algorithm. So they got special permission from Trump's first administration for their computer to be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're figuring, working out the kinks. We're figuring out to make how, not make it racist later, maybe.
Yeah.
But not, what do you want?
Not yet still, but, you know, maybe eventually they'll get to that.
So then later, during Joe Biden's administration, some senators, I think it's Cory Booker and Elizabeth Warren, sent emails to Upstart, being like, hey, are y'all still being racist? Because, like, you guys have had this waiver for, like, 5 years now. Can the algorithm not be racist now? So instead, what happened was all the tech billionaires bought the government specifically so they could end the CFPB, which Musk then went on and did with the aid of Data Republican.
Uh-huh.
So later on, when your money disappears in the bank and you've got no one to call to complain to, it's because Data Republican and Elon Musk wanted it to be that way. So now that she works for the Pentagon, what is Jenica up to? What does she do for them? We don't know exactly which parts are her job for the Pentagon and which one's her private role, because she still pretends like that's like a part-time job and everything else is her independent work, right? But what she spent her time doing is she made a database to track Americans based on a political affiliation. Basically, she has a mapping software. You can go click on it and search it and try to find out who's associated with the Democratic Socialist America in the United States.
Fine. Now, so she's making lists for this administration right now?
Yeah. I want to work the Pentagon.
Making
lists of the Pentagon's political opponents. It's called DSA Explorer, and she describes it as, quote, an interactive map of the Democratic Socialists of America and the wider anti-imperialist solidarity network. Now, I've never heard the term wider anti-imperialist solidarity network, but I'm trying to figure out which, because I think she made up the term, but it's supposed to be bad.
Yeah, right. They do that all the time. We talk about it all the time, especially where Democratic Socialists are concerned, when they talk about their platform and stuff like that, all the horror of, you know, the things that these people want, like, you know, healthcare and higher wages and stuff like that.
Can you believe these people have been solid? These people believe in solidarity. They believe in, like, being friends with their neighbors and having their back. That sounds fucking evil, right? So, but there's none of these people on this list. Some of them might be car care members of the DSA. Some of them are just, and like her software just connected them with like the same way drones do targeting, where if your phone has a contact and if 3 degrees separated from somebody in the DSA, you might be on this list. We don't know who's on it, right? But it's essentially the mass doxing of people with "in this house we believe in" yard signs.
Uh-huh.
In a lengthy disclaimer on the database website, Pounds warned that her data may not be 100% accurate. Inferred ideological and patron sphere associations are analytical interpretations, not statements of fact, and nothing here alleges unlawful conduct by any person or organization. Do not rely on this material without independent verification, she said. I'm sure nobody will.
Right. Yeah, give all these disclaimers just to cover your ass legally or whatever. It's like not a good sign for the integrity of the product or service you're offering or whatever.
And it... Like we talk about these sort of paranoid fucking like surveillance databases. I just want to you talk about what exactly we're looking at. I read about one the other day that sorted people into criminal threat levels by their internet activity. An example that the company gave as for what it's up to is like if a person Instagrams about a perfume brand that reads as too expensive for their stated income level, then the AI puts them in like a spreadsheet column for suspected drug dealers.
Holy shit. Really?
Jenica's...
People do that all the time. Do you know what I mean? That's what I feel like that's like... For a lot of people, that's what social media is for. You know what I mean? Yes. It's like that type of bullshit and aspirational bullshit and fake it till you make it type stuff. That's crazy.
That's really what's going to save us from like this kind of tech fascism is the people lying on the internet is going to drown the algorithm in fake positivity. Right. But there's so many drug dealers. Everybody's got 3 cars. Yeah. Everybody,
right.
Well, people like Airbnb mansions and pretend they live there to be influencers. Yeah. So I just want to point out that the database company I'm talking about was made by professionals. Jenica made this in her spare time as an amateur, right? So her database is going to be worse than this. So if you read a book recently on the weather underground, maybe for research because you want to kill leftists, you're still going to end up on fucking in Jenica's database. If you streamed one battle after another on a fucking airplane, you're probably on Jenica's list of subversives. By the way, Jenica's List of Subverses, fucking great band name. Somebody should take it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for watching. We appreciate it. Real quick, do go to treycrowder.com and check out my upcoming tour dates. I'll be in upstate New York and Hartford, Connecticut soon, Austin, Texas, Eugene, Oregon, East Tennessee, back home there before too long, all at treycrowder.com. Consider checking out producer Matt's audio exclusive, Good Skews, Good People Doing Good Things, for a little palate cleanser for you. And as for this show, if you go to Patreon and look up my name, or go to weeklyskews.com/more, you'll find an opportunity to subscribe to the show on there for $5 a month, where you get ad-free versions of all the mainline episodes and 2 free full-length bonus episodes per month, which include periodically Q&As, where we take your questions and we answer them, including now, every now and then, live Q&As. So consider supporting the show. But either way, thanks for watching us. We'll see you next Tuesday. That's it. Love you. Bye.